Off the record? She asks, still hesitating. I have one student who obsessively bites her nails to the nub, another who can't stop picking his nose, another who hums while she works, and another who stutters. Every year, the kids with pronounced overbites get called Bugs Bunny, and the kids with glasses get called Four Eyes. I know every parent wants their child to fit in, and no one deserves to be teased, but Charlie's experience for a first grader feels pretty normal to me. I laugh, releasing all fear and vengeful emotion from my heart, replacing it with an open-armed acceptance and empathy that extends first to Charlie with his yellow index card and his mug of marbles and his less than 100% and his chocolate-stained bottom. And then it expands to include his entire first-grade motley crew class with all their crazy tics and idiosyncrasies and deficiencies. And then it reaches Miss Gavin in her ugly shoes for possessing the patience and courage to teach and deal with them every day. And, because I have a bit more, it stretches to include me. A 37-year-old woman whose husband is holding her left hand so she won't unconsciously grab onto her own boob. And normal's overrated, if you ask me, Miss Gavin says. I agree, I say. Miss Gavin smiles. I do wonder about Charlie's future, though. When the other students stop picking their noses, and the kids with bad teeth start seeing an orthodontist, and the kids with glasses get contact lenses, will Charlie's ADHD continue to make him an outsider? Sports are a great way to belong, but Charlie has had a hard time waiting his turn, staying in position, playing with the rules, all necessary qualities for being successful at soccer, basketball, t-ball. He already doesn't love playing any of these sports, but he's too young to realize that they're optional. We sign him up for whatever is offered for his age, and he shows up for practices and games like he shows up for school, because we tell him to and take him there. But at some age, likely not too far off from now, if he doesn't improve, he'll probably opt out, and he'll lose all those opportunities for fitting in and forming lasting friendships that being part of a team affords. It's too bad we don't live near a mountain. He'd probably thrive on a snowboarding team. So, keep up with what you're doing at home. I just wanted you to know that he's doing much better here. I think you'll all be so proud of his report card this time, says Miss Gavin. Thank you. We will, says Bob. The kids from Charlie's grade have been playing outside at recess during our meeting. With a few minutes still left before they have to return to their classrooms, Bob and I decide to walk over and say hello to Charlie before Bob drives me home and he returns to work. We make it to the edge of the long cobblestone walkway when we both stop to notice a big commotion erupting near the swings. It looks like two kids are fighting, and one teacher is having a heck of a time trying to break it up. All other activity on the playground has ceased in mid-motion. Everyone's watching to see what will happen. I can't make out the faces of the two kids from where Bob and I are standing, but in the next instant I recognize one of the two coats. Charlie's orange North Face ski coat. Charlie! I yell. Bob releases my left hand and takes off towards Charlie. Every muscle in my body wants to run to Charlie too, but my broken brain won't let me. My child is in danger, or in trouble, or both, and within sight, and I can't get to him to either save or scold him. Bob is on the ground with Charlie now, and the teacher is dragging the other child away by the hand. I cane, step, drag, and breathe. Frustrated with each cane and impatient with each drag, mad at myself for not already being over there. What happened? I ask when I finally reach them. Charlie kicks at the dirty snow with his boot and says nothing. His nose is running and he's breathing hard through his mouth. His face and fingernails are filthy, but I don't see any blood. Go ahead, answer your mother, says Bob. He said a bad thing, says Charlie. I look at Bob. This must be one of the boys who've been teasing him. I try to scan to the left to see which boy the teacher has taken into custody, but I can't find them. Did that boy call you a name? I ask. Charlie stops kicking at the ground and casts his eyes up at me. No, he says. He called you one. He called you a dumb cripple. I pause, stunned. unable to launch into the prepackaged, cliched speech every mother has filed in her apron pocket about sticks and stones and the high road. I try scanning to the left again, wondering if the boy might be the nose picker or the stutterer, but I still can't find him. I return to Charlie. "Thank you for sticking up for me," I say, loving him. "But you shouldn't fight." "But," says Charlie, "no buts, no fighting." "Plus, that kid doesn't even know what he's talking about," I say. "I'm the smartest cripple he's ever seen."